We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
In today's day and age, you know, especially young consumers around the world, they want to buy brands that represent a good value, but also that have good values. It's about value and values. And I do think consumers are rewarding us for the stands that we take, our commitment to sustainability, our commitment to doing business the right way. I like to say we'll always choose the harder right over the easier wrong. And that's part of our moral compass. But it guides just about everything that we do.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Today, I'm going to hand the microphone over to my very capable colleague and friend, Ellen Davis. Ellen, take it away.
Thank you, Bill. So every year, NRF honors one individual as the visionary. This person is a retail executive with a proven track record of orchestrating change in the industry. We can't think of anyone more deserving of that award than our guest today, Chip Bergh, president and CEO of Levi Strauss & Co. Chip has led Levi's through an extraordinary transformation. Hopefully we'll talk about that. And we're so excited to be talking with you today. For today's episode, I'm so happy to be joined by my co-host, fellow NRF Foundation board member and huge supporter, Steve Barr, consumer markets leader for PwC and a great friend of NRF. Welcome, Steve.
Pleasure to be here, Ellen. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, and welcome, Chip.
Thank you very much to both of you for having me. It's quite an honor to be receiving this award.
We're very excited to have you here. So, gosh, where do we start? I've got I guess the biggest question on my mind, Chip, is talking a little bit about this huge transformation of Levi's over the last couple of years. And last July, when the Harvard Business Review did the piece about the transformation, I read it more than once. I actually read it again this morning because I think it's such a fascinating piece. My first question is, at the beginning of that article, you mentioned that you were at P&G for 28 years, and when a recruiter called you about the Levi's opening, you had a one-word answer, which was wow.
It was two words. It was, oh, wow.
Okay, fair enough.
And yeah, I mean, I've been blessed. I've had really an amazing career, and I spent 28 years at P&G. At the time, I was running the Gillette business, which P&G had acquired a couple of years earlier. And I was actually over in China with my executive team for one of our quarterly offsites, and this call had been arranged. And it was a headhunter who I had known for years and who had been hounding me for different jobs for a number of years. And she called and she said, I think I've got something that might be interesting to you. Mm-hmm. It's Levi Strauss. And literally the words out of my mouth, and she can confirm this, were, oh, wow. And it was just because there are very few brands in my life, and I am a brand guy, and we can talk about that. There are very few brands in my life where I have such a strong emotional connection. And I like to say everybody has a Levi's story. Mm-hmm. I have multiple Levi's story, but you know, I was replaying it in my head as we were talking, and I realized the brand had kind of disappeared from the face of the earth almost over the prior decade or 15 years. To me, as I started doing research about the company, there's a saying, you only get to leave P&G once,
right.
Make it count. And this looked like the stuff that legacies are made of, mm-hmm. turning around one of America's most American brands, mm-hmm. and making a difference like that. So it was really an extraordinary opportunity.
And when you first got into the company, you asked the senior leadership team a whole bunch of questions. You know, one of my favorite was, you know, what are you worried I will do and what are you worried I won't do?
Right.
And I thought that was such a provocative way to phrase that.
Yeah.
What did you learn from that process that helped characterize how you took everything else forward?
I got the idea out of a book, to be honest with you. It wasn't my idea, but I sent 6 questions to the top 60 leaders in the company. And because I was coming from outside the industry, I didn't really know anything about retail, anything about apparel to speak of. And I knew I had to learn a lot. So, and the company was, you know, not performing well. And so I sent the same 6 questions to everybody in advance and then set up 1-hour meetings with each one of them. And the question, I'm probably not going to remember all 6 off the top of my head, but what are the 3 things you think we have to keep?
Mm-hmm.
What are the 3 things you think must change? the two that you referenced. What's the one thing you hope I will do? And what's the one thing you're afraid I might do? And, you know, the interesting thing that happened was after about 15 of those interviews, the picture became really, really clear. I mean, the answers for what was needed already existed inside the company. You know, we have a lot of talented people. People were frustrated the company wasn't performing. And so it was clear, you know, one of the things that had to stay was were the values of the company. I mean, something that goes back to Levi Strauss, the man himself. But one of the things that had to change was we needed a strategy. Everybody was off doing their own thing. You know, whatever their function or their business unit thought they had to go get done. And it wasn't all being tied together. So it was a great way to meet people. Part of the listening tour, too, was to go talk to customers, to go talk with consumers and spend time with consumers. And really, in the first 3 or 4 months, the picture of what we needed to do became really clear.
So fascinating.
Yeah. So Chip, that oh wow that you first had was around the iconic status of the brand. But once you were inside, what's the positive oh wow that you learned that didn't come in with you, but as you spent time getting closer to your colleagues and the brands and the industry and your customers that...
You know, well, even though the company hadn't been performing for more than a decade, one of the oh wows that I discovered once I got inside was everybody's still rooting for Levi's. You know, our customers wanted Levi's to come back. Consumers still had this passion for the brand. Now, we had lost a generation of consumers. I've got two boys, and at the time they were in their kind of early to mid-20s, and the brand was never in their consideration set as a teenager. And so we had lost that younger cohort, and our average consumer in the U.S. was a male who was 47 years old. Today, our average consumer is 32 years old.
Wow.
And much more of a closer split to 50-50 of women than men. So, but the big aha was everybody was still rooting for Levi's. They hadn't written us off. They were just waiting for the company to get its act together again.
Yeah. So at the core of Levi's is this brand we all know and love, but is also a company grounded on profits with principles.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why that's so important.
Well, I think it's become even more important in today's day and age as governments and NGOs just aren't fulfilling their true responsibility to societies. One of the great things about this company is we have a long history of what we call profits through principles, a fundamental conviction or belief that doing business in the right way is good business, and consumers will reward you for that. So this goes all the way back to Levi Strauss himself. You know, 165 years ago when he started the company, the very first year he made a profit, he donated part of the profits to a local orphanage. And so we've had this as part of our ethos ever since the beginning. And in today's day and age, you know, especially young consumers around the world, they want to buy brands that represent a good value, but also that have good values. It's about value and values. And I do think consumers are rewarding us for the stands that we take, our commitment to sustainability, our commitment to doing business the right way. I like to say, we'll always choose the harder right over the easier wrong. And that's part of our moral compass. But it guides just about everything that we do.
Can you talk a little bit about some of those harder rights? So, you know, you guys have taken some tremendous important stances in the last several years, but also throughout the history of the company. Can you talk a little bit about that? And also, as a follow-up, how do you decide where you want to lean in and how do you decide where, you know, maybe either the company's not ready or that's not a position that you really want to fight for? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and there's a recent example of where we did decide to wade into one issue that we had never taken a position on before. But it is part of our history. So if you go way, way back, the company desegregated back when we had factories in the Southeast. We desegregated the factories 10 years before it became federal law. We were one of the very first companies to provide healthcare benefits to same-sex partners. We were handing out information pamphlets on HIV/AIDS. You know, we're based in San Francisco. The outbreak really started there. Our CEO at the time was handing out information brochures to employees as they were coming into work. the one that I like to talk about, it's fairly relevant because it was in the news not that long ago, but when the Boy Scouts banned gay troop leaders back in the 1990s, we pulled all financial support from the Boy Scouts. And the following week, the company got 130,000 letters, 97% of which were opposed to the company's position, and the company did not waver. And now we look back on that, you know, almost 30 years later and go, we were really on the side of right. I mean, to the point where the Boy Scouts have now dropped the name Boys. And that's kind of part of the acid test for the positions that we'll take. It's, we're not afraid to stand up for things that might be contentious, might even be unpopular in the current environment, but where we believe that it is one of the bigger issues in society, we're not afraid to take a stand. So the latest one that we took a position on was kind of trying to put an end to the gun epidemic mm-hmm. that we have in this country. You know, the number of needless deaths that occur every year because of how liberal we are as a country with guns and how easy, I mean, many states it's harder to get a driver's license than it is to buy a weapon. Mm-hmm. And after the Parkland shooting, I said, enough is enough. This is something we really need to take a position on. And it is, I believe, one of the most defining issues in society here in the United States anyway. But we, over the last 2 years, we've taken positions on immigration. You know, a week after the president was elected, he put the immigration ban in place. We felt that was fundamentally wrong. This is a country of immigrants. Our company was started by an immigrant. Immigrants make tremendous impact in society and business and education in the United States. And the ban just fundamentally was a human rights issue as far as I was concerned. So we took a stand there. We've taken a stand for the DACA kids. You know, and at the end of the day, we'll take a position on things that really matter. The gun position was new for us. And there was a lot of internal discussion about, you know, because you can't stand for everything. You have to be kind of strategic and pick your spots. And we tend to stand for things that impact the environment. You know, so climate change has been big for us. Sustainability has been big. Human rights, and that's why immigration and DACA and things like that have been big. Guns were new for us. But again, because we felt that it was a defining issue of our day right now, that's why we decided to take a stand on it.
Yeah, Chip. You mentioned your employees, and I know we're assembled in New York to celebrate you as the visionary, but I've heard you speak so passionately about the role the employees and your leadership team have had in your success. Can you just share more?
Yeah, well, again, to this award specifically, even, you know, while I'm being singled out as an individual, I would be the first person to say, this is not about me. This has been a team effort. I didn't turn the company around myself. I helped develop a strategy. I lead the organization. I try to empower them. I make sure they've got the resources they need to get the job done. But I've got a super talented team at all levels around the company. I'm not talking about just my direct reports. And it's those people who have really put the brand back on the map and have participated and really made the turnaround such a success. It's really been a team effort, and I wouldn't be here if it weren't for them.
So let's pivot a little bit from the brand guy to talk about retail.
Okay.
So here we are at retail's big show. We've got 35,000 plus of our closest friends and family here at the Javits Center, right?
It's amazing,
In New York,
too.
Isn't it crazy?
It really is amazing.
You guys just opened a beautiful new flagship in Times Square,
yep.
Which is incredible.
Yep.
And one of the big topics of conversation here at the show and in the retail industry generally is the way the customer is changing, creating experiences.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit how you guys are thinking about your physical locations and what that looks like today? And even if you could tip your hand a little bit to the future and how you guys are thinking about
sure.
that.
Sure. Well, actually, our commitment to retail goes back to when we put the strategy in place. And we developed a strategy. It's pretty straightforward. It's very simple. Everybody in the company can rattle it off. It was to build our profitable core business, which generates most of the revenue and most of the earnings, expand for more. You know, that profitable core, they're big, profitable, well-developed businesses and relatively slow growth. But we had a number of businesses that were underdeveloped. Our women's business is underdeveloped. Our tops business is underdeveloped. So the growth was going to come from this. Grow the profitable core. And then the third big strategic choice was to become a leading world-class omnichannel retailer. You know, the aspiration, the ambition was to make Levi's a head-to-toe lifestyle brand again, because we were once upon a time. But when you shopped wholesale, you know, we were a classification business. We, you know, you'd walk into a wholesale customer and you saw a lot of blue denim bottoms, and that was about it. Mm-hmm. So retail, we can control the brand and how it shows up and create that aspirational head-to-toe look for the brand. So I saw it as really something super strategic for us. And at the time when I joined the company, we had about 2,700 stores globally. So the fact of the matter is, whether we liked it or not,
you're already
we
there.
Were already a retailer.
That's right, for sure.
And so the job was really, we got to get good at this. Mm-hmm. And that's really where we put our focus. And it has played, I think, an instrumental part in us turning around the company. A lot of our growth over the last 2 years have been driven by women's and tops and outerwear and some of these other categories that are in the expand for more part of our strategy. And it's because we're able to control that in our own environment in retail. So we're getting better as a retail. We're investing heavily in retail and have been for the last 5 years. And part of the acceleration of our growth over the last 2 years has been because our retail business is really, really outperforming now. And arguably, we don't talk about comp store growth or anything like that publicly, but arguably we're outperforming just about everybody in the industry right now. The brand is hot. We're executing well at retail. To be clear, I think we still have a lot of opportunities, but that's been a key part of our turnaround.
Quite a story.
Chip, what role has social media, influencers, and even some of your collaborative partnerships like Levi Stadium and Levi's Landing and AT&T Park played in your success?
It's all been part of putting the brand back at the center of culture again. You know, we like to say this brand is at its best when it's at the center of culture. So the marketing team has done an amazing job putting us back at the center of culture at music events like Coachella, but music events all over the world where we're front and center and really tapped into culture. Levi's Stadium was a deal that we did pretty early on. And what's culture in the U.S.? It's sports and it's entertainment. What happens in a big stadium like Levi's Stadium? The 49ers play, plus we get lots of concerts. The Rolling Stones are coming this spring. So it was almost a perfect, you know, it was a perfect fit, no pun intended, for us to do that. And it has contributed. Each one of these things, you know, by each in and of themselves, probably not enough. But when you put it all together and tie a bow around it, that's been a central part to putting the brand back at the center of culture and making the brand cool again.
So it's a good thing when Beyonce wears her Levi denim shorts at Coachella.
It's, you know, when People Magazine, it's an even better thing when People Magazine says the official uniform of Coachella is Levi's.
That's pretty amazing.
And that's kind of the role that it sort of has played over the last couple of years.
Wow. Well, I think we're just about out of time, which is unfortunate because I could go on and on this one all day. But Chip, we're going to move on to what is a favorite part of our segment here on Retail Gets Real, which is something we call Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
All right, let me tell you how this goes. Steve and I are going to ask you questions and you answer with the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Let's see.
No storytelling.
Well, I'll start with a softball.
Less than a tweet. How about that?
All right. Okay.
What's your most favorite event that you've attended at Levi Stadium?
The Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50.
What's in your fridge all the time?
Yogurt.
If you had one superpower, what would you like it to be?
Be able to predict the future.
What's the best advice you've ever received?
To only do the things that only you in that position can do. If you're spending your time doing things that somebody else in your organization can do, you're spending your time in the wrong place.
Such a good piece of advice. Okay, what do you do to unwind?
Swim.
Go ahead.
What's your favorite comfort food?
Pizza.
Oh, man, you're my kind of guy. Favorite place in the world to visit?
Ooh, tough one. I'll say Bangkok.
Wow.
What's the last purchase you made online? It wasn't intended.
Shoe brushes.
Oh, great.
Just shoe recently. Brushes.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, how do you end? I'm going to ask you a better question than ending on a shoe brush. What are you most excited about for the business this year?
We've got some amazing product coming down the pike, and we've got a couple of really cool collaborations.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much, Chip. Before we go, where can someone go to learn more about what you guys are doing at Levi's?
www.levi.com, where we tell a lot of great stories. Walk into any of our stores and talk to one of our stylists about what's selling and what's hot, and they will be sure to get you squared away in a great-looking pair of Levi's.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us, Chip, and thank you so much to my BFF, Steve, for being here today, co-hosting and supporting Retail Gets Real all year long. We're going to post more information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes, although I'm going to say this one will rank as a highlight for the big show this year. So thank you for listening. If you like Retail Gets Real, please tell your colleagues about the show or give us a rating on your podcast app.